Hello, everyone. Welcome. This is Andy Smerick of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. Please join me in welcoming my co-host, just elected the next governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Stafford Palmieri.
Well, hello, Andy. So what does this mean? Am I more...
I was trying to think, what do you call governors other than Governor Palmieri? It's not like, you know, there's no other honorific. The Honorable Stafford? I think that's how we'll...
Don't you need the JD to be the Honorable something?
No, I think anytime you're elected to something or you're appointed to a position of sufficient merit, you're the... But you're Honorable anyway. So welcome. So what's new?
Oh, not too much. I'm really excited about Amber's Research Minute. She picked out a great song today. Just warning all of our listeners, get excited.
Maybe you want to talk about the content of the show. I think a lot of people
We've got some really great stuff coming up.
We're going to have Pardon the Gadfly first with Janie, and then Amber, of course, with her riveting Research Minute. And finally, the big man, Mickey, will rate that reform. You ready to pardon the gadfly?
I am ready to pardon the gadfly.
Janie, you ready?
I'm ready too.
All right, let's do this.
All right. The Hawaii teacher furlough debacle has gained quite a bit of press. Even Arnie Duncan weighed in on the pages of the Honolulu Advertiser. But what's received less attention is the fact that Hawaii actually used its stimulus dollars to cut back on the state contribution to education, instead of merely filling budgetary holes. What should we make of this perverse use of federal dollars?
Well, Hawaii's not the only one. So there are two issues here. One is that they didn't use all of their money just for education, and that is allowable. The federal government in the regulations said that was okay. They just had to bring their education funding up to 2006 levels. So if we're going to beat up on them for that, we have to beat up on other states too. The more pressing issue is how they decided to do this. Cut some education funding, only bring it up to 2006 levels, and then cut 17 days and use this money for other purposes. Now, a lot of states have done some pretty boneheaded things with regard to ARRA funding and cuts and so forth, but this is the most boneheaded of them all. The fact that kids are the ones paying the price for this is the thing that's most shocking. What do you think about this, Stafford?
Well, I completely agree with you, and I think there are two additional facts to this story that make it even worse. One is that the reason this happened was that there are other employees in schools that are not teachers who had already gotten their furlough days through union contracts, and the union leaders, the teacher union leaders, decided that it would be way too complicated to figure out how to do the scheduling of all these different furlough days, so they just decided that they would align their furlough days with those furlough days. And the result is, and here, get ready for this, there are only 3 weeks, if the furloughs stay in place, there will be only 3 weeks this school year that have 5 instructional days in them.
My God, unbelievable.
Because of Monday holidays, Christmas break, or excuse me, winter break, if we're going to be PC here, spring break, etc. 3 weeks with 5 days.
So, two additional things to add to this. The first, of course, is I can't imagine that Hawaii has any hope now of getting race to the top dollars. They have all but disqualified themselves. I'm surprised that they didn't think about this, because they have such budget problems. At least you would want to put yourself in position to get an extra $250, $300 million. But I guess Duncan's letter, which I want to bring up as the second issue, has pretty much told them that they made a bad choice there. But again, and I've blogged about this, and I just have to bring it up again. So every time Secretary Duncan, in one of his speeches, begins by saying that states and districts have the answer, they don't need the federal government telling them what to do. When he was the chief in Chicago, he hated getting calls from Washington because Washington just meddled, that they could get the answers themselves. Now that he's in Washington, D.C., he says he knows that Washington, D.C. doesn't have the answers. Well, here's a case where Washington, D.C., via his letter to Honolulu, apparently does have the answer, and Hawaii has gotten it wrong. I just want to keep putting this on the table. At what points is it okay for Washington to lecture states? At what point does Arne Duncan actually have the answers, and at what point does he really believe that states and districts should be allowed to do their own thing? In this case, I believe that the state was completely wrong in what they did, but I'm also not going out there banging on the table saying states and districts always have the right answer. Issue two.
Texas recently announced that it's revamping its teacher preparation program accreditation criteria. In addition to the 70% passing rate on the teacher certification exam, currently the only criterion for accreditation, schools will have to follow students for 1 year past graduation, be evaluated by principals at schools receiving each program's graduates, and tie student-teacher data back to the preparation program from which they came from. And that 70% pass rate will incrementally rise to 80%. But was this in response to Arne Duncan's recent lambasting of education schools and teacher preparation programs, or was Texas merely enticed by the promise of Race to the Top funds?
I think it's Race to the Top funds, but maybe Arne Duncan's speeches helped.
Probably didn't hurt.
No, didn't hurt. I was kind of encouraged by this. They are using 3 years of teacher data, so we'll have to wait to see what happens, how this pans out. But they could probably take a look at what Louisiana's doing. I don't know if they have taken a look at what Louisiana is doing and has done. But this is it's a step in the right direction, and unlike Hawaii, Texas is paying attention to the Race to the Top criteria.
That definitely true. You know, I actually had this conversation with someone just a day or two ago, and I don't want to name him. He asked me not to, but he's a leader I trust in the world of teacher preparation and so forth. And the case he was making was all of the reforms that are happening right now in the world of charter schools and data and so forth. Yeah, some of them might be good. We don't know how they're going to pan out. But he is extremely excited nationwide in what's going on with teacher preparation when it comes to some of these very issues. And he pointed to a few different states, including what they're doing in a couple states along the Eastern Seaboard. So, which has actually made me think more about this. Maybe we're going to look back on this era and say that, all right, this is when colleges of education actually got taken to the woodshed and changed their behavior. Maybe this is the point where we're going to look back and say, tenure really changed now. I don't want to be too optimistic, but we have a secretary who's talking about this. It seems like we're having some reform-minded college leaders, like David Steiner, who had been in New York, now the commissioner there, have the Race to the Top. So I'm cautiously optimistic that this is going to change.
I mean, this isn't the first time that ed schools have come under assault like this. What do you think's changed that's actually making them change their practice or consider changing their practice?
Well, so yeah, let me actually argue against myself now. When I was a state legislative aide years ago, I went into that job thinking that local school districts were going to be the most powerful players around, or unions. What I actually found out is that colleges and universities are extraordinarily powerful in the political process.
I think there's another interesting topic here that hasn't been brought up as much, which is that the really high quality programs that have the residencies, that have the constant feedback, that have the very extensive mentoring programs are extremely expensive. Mm-hmm. And in this sort of time of budgetary crunch, that's something that these schools, which are already facing, you know, huge losses in their endowments, they're not going to want to implement a program that's, you know, 20 times more expensive than the sort of lackluster program that they have now.
Yeah, just to end this little discussion, when I want to convince some of my friends how mad the world of education reform is sometimes, I just say, do you realize there have been colleges of education that are in existence now for well over a century, and to this day, we still don't know which colleges of education really are producing the graduates, the teachers who are able to lift student performance. We don't even have metrics for that yet. Issue 3.
To cut back on costs, the North Carolina legislature ended state math, reading, and computer graduation tests last week. But in an interesting twist, they made the changes retroactive, which means that students who failed to graduate as far back as 1981 because they didn't pass the math or reading tests, or since 2001, the computer test, are now eligible for a better late than never diploma. Is there some rationale for this move, or is it simply insane?
Insane.
Yeah, this is one of those things where So I get teased because I always say things like, you know, to give someone their credit, or I'm way too forgiving, I'm told, about stuff like this. Like, my instinct is that typically legislatures they try to do the right thing. I can't even give them the benefit of the doubt here. This just doesn't make sense to me. I wish I could sit down with the people who made this decision and say, please explain to me how this makes sense to do this. So people who we said were not qualified, who didn't deserve these diplomas, now all of a sudden, even though they have done nothing, deserve these diplomas now. I just don't get it.
I don't get it either. And the reasoning that they're using, not for the retroactive bit, but for getting rid of the tests altogether, is because they're getting rid of tests that are not federally required. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to cut back on their costs. The tests are expensive to administer, et cetera, et cetera. But they're not saving any money by making this new rule retroactive. In fact, they're probably costing themselves some money because all these people are in all the paperwork of giving them diplomas if they actually decide to go pursue, you know, their diploma from 1982. And it just, I mean, what are they doing?
I mean, put yourself in the position of a college or an employer. You actually hope that a diploma means something, that it actually stands for something, that you can trust that it means something. But in the case of this policy change, what a diploma meant for the past 50 years is different than what it is going to mean tomorrow and every day forward, not because of something different that students have done, but just because of a change in bookkeeping. Okay, I'd love to talk to these state legislatures and get them to explain to me what's going on. Look who's here!
Look who's here!
Welcome,
my
Amber.
Seat feels so low.
I can't hear it very well.
So, what are you going to edify us
How
with?
You doing? I'm in the edifying mood. I think you were under a rock if you didn't hear about this report this week, but I will edify nonetheless.
I wish people could see I'm removing my watch, like the Trilly style, and I'm looking at it.
Oh, no! Well, you're going to listen to me, too. All right, this week we have a new report out from NCES that basically says that many states in recent years have lowered the bar in terms of what it means for a student to be proficient.
I'm shocked.
Shocker. That's no surprise to many, since NCLB's 2014 deadline is obviously looming. Fordham and our contractor NWA discovered this 2 years ago, by the way, in our proficiency illusion report, but the difference this time is that the messenger is the federal government and the common yardstick is NAEP. Analysts mapped state proficiency standards onto the NAEP scales and concluded that all states' reading standards were below NAEP's proficient range, and in math, only two states had standards in the NAEP proficient range. Not good. Nearly half of the states in the last 2 years have changed aspects of their test or assessment system so as to prevent comparison across the 2 years. However, when each version of these states' test was mapped to the NAEP scale, results revealed that a third to a half of states had lowered their previous standard.
Ouch.
In grade 8 math, for instance, Arkansas and Georgia raced to the bottom. Arkansas's NAEP scale equivalent dipped 11 points over the last 2 years, and Georgia's almost 12. In the end, this report adds more fuel to the common standards fire currently blazing to a January final draft deadline. Here's hoping that this effort makes the findings like these less likely in the future.
So, the question...
Give me my time.
64 seconds.
All right.
He wasn't actually looking. he was listening.
But you earned every second of it. So here's a big question. Is this the final nail in the coffin of our 150-year history of allowing states to make up their own standards and districts to decide what it is that they're going to teach and test?
I don't know what you mean by nail in the coffin. If your question is it going to move all states to jump onto the common standards bandwagon? No.
Is it going to, like, say there are 250 members of Congress right now. Mm-hmm. Is this report going to make it 400 or 450 who believe that national standards are the answer?
I think it was a monumental move for this to come from the feds. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've done similar reports, but they went further this time than they've ever gone in terms of, you know, these are the states that lowered the standards. You know, they didn't come out and, you know, they walked a line, but yet there were the tables in there that clearly showed which states had lowered their standards. And they could have been even less, you know, they could have been a little more vague than they were had they wanted to, but they weren't.
So do you think this is the feds setting it up to A, get themselves away from No Child Left Behind, and B, set the stage for when the national standards come out and they are pulling teeth at the state level to get them to sign on, being like, see this report that we publish in November before we publish the standards.
I definitely think, and I said this week to a couple reporters, I mean, absolutely, this is more fodder. It only adds to our displeasure at the current state of affairs. And if anything, you know, I think we're at this weird place where we all get it now. I really do think we get it now. I think we've had report after report after report. States don't like it. I mean, you know, everybody's just sort of unhappy. So the question now is, how do we get from point A to point B? You know, in terms of if we're unhappy, what are we going to do about it? And what is it going to look like for states to sign on? You know, and there's a lot of questions that we don't have answers that we need answers to.
Well, so I actually think that national standards are coming and national tests are coming. The big question, though, and I'm waiting for the Department of Education to weigh in on this, is what happens when we have those national standards and national tests, mm-hmm. and we follow this tight loose, and mm-hmm. the loose part is we allow districts and states to follow through on making a better education system because there are national standards and we can measure and be transparent. What happens then when we've adopted tight loose and pick any state, California, still has 500 persistently low-performing schools that they refuse to do anything about.
I think the tight loose is just a cover for 10 years down the line being tight. No, I think this is the same thing we went through with No Child Left Behind. There was a lot of negotiating, a lot of compromising, and it was just to get the bill passed.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying that this could, the worse it gets, it could create more appetite for displeasure. We're willing to go further and give up a little bit more than we were when we keep hearing the same thing over and over again. Yeah. So it's an evolution, so to speak.
Yeah, another challenge that I'm waiting for the department to weigh in on is, okay, so we have national standards, we go tight loose. What about all this federal funding, the tens of billions of dollars in Title I funding? Are we really going to send that out the door and just say, California, please do good stuff with this, or please Florida, do good stuff with this? But it's tight loose, so we're going to be loose on this stuff. On that interesting note,
so many things to think about.
What is our song?
All right. Since some states are lowering standards, we have the Limbo Rock by Chubby Checker, who asked, how low can you go?
Lower now.
Oh, it's so good.
Lower now. How low can you go? First you spread your limbo feet.
Oh, that's all we get. That's all we get.
I wish we could have like a research 5 minutes, and 2 minutes of it would just be listening to
the low can you. I just have visions. I don't know about Mike, you guys, revolt. But Limbo, the limbo was just a prominent part of every birthday I ever had growing up. Yeah. And we would just have the song blaring, and I'm just trying so hard to get under that limbo stick. Man, what
limbo is fun. Limbo. Good, clean fun.
I hope lots of our listeners are having the same beautiful memory. So cute. All right, Mickey, you going to come in and rate that reform?
Okay.
So what's going on, Mickey?
Not a whole lot.
You're excited about these election results coming in tonight?
Mildly. Don't have a personal stake, really, in any of them. Not even a Virginia resident.
Oh, really?
Though I guess none of us are, right?
I'm not. I'm a
Amber
resident.
Is. You don't live in Virginia, Amber?
Oh. Yeah, great state of Maryland here. But do you believe this is going to be a harbinger for things to come in a year from now in the midterms?
No, not particularly. I just, they seem to be kind of so many kind of one-off individual idiosyncratic races, you know, from a special election to, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, out of all of them, the Virginia election seems to kind of be the kind of biggest test as to the Obama administration and the kind of legacy of the Obama campaign, which was huge in Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, whether that can carry over into, you know, the various state local races.
Okay, I think we're running short on time, so hit it.
Okay. For my rate that reform today, I have a very unlikely series of events. The starting point is...
Okay, so when I said we were short on time...
Pregnant
that
pause.
That means less long pauses.
Wait, no, but this is a short... It's a short story, just with dramatic pauses in the middle.
That was the best pregnant pause I've ever heard.
What do you start at the beginning? Okay. Plenty of time.
Well, I mean, we can cut this. We can cut the dead time out. Okay. All right. We got an Algebra 2 class at Oak Ridge High School in El Dorado Hills, California. Event number one. The teacher of this class crushes a live fly in a clap motion with both hands. Okay. Crushes a live fly. Event two. The teacher challenges his class. Anyone who eats the dead fly gets an automatic A on the upcoming test.
How old are these students?
This is Algebra 2, so I imagine, you know, juniors, okay. Sophomores. Event number three, student Steven Zeldag takes the teacher up on the offer and eats the fly on the spot.
That's awesome.
Event number four, Steven thinking that he's set on the test, doesn't study at all.
Oh, my Lord.
He takes the test, but bombs it, and he gets 9 points out of 46. solid F territory. So event number five, Steven gets his graded test back, and the teacher writes in red ink, quote, and there's an image of this, here is your A on your test. Okay, and then event six, the teacher actually records an F in his grade book, and he tells the student, see, I gave you an A on your test. It's just not going in the grade book.
I like this teacher for so many reasons.
The principal is currently investigating the incident and is not responding to media inquiries. So, Mr. Algebra 2 teacher was utterly irresponsible in a number of ways, but you got to give him credit for killing a fly with his bare hands. C minus.
All right, anything else we want to talk about? We haven't gone on long enough today. Any final words? Mickey, I think you used your time, Stafford.
I'll leave you with a pregnant pause.
All right, everybody. Thanks for being with us. Sorry we went on for so long. Just having lots of fun here.
You're Andy Smerik.
Another pregnant pause. I'm seeing if there's anything else. Okay, make sure you read the original Gadfly at excellence.net. Don't forget to read our blog at the Flypaper. And until next time, I am Andy Smerik.
And I'm Stafford Palmieri.
Governor Palmieri.
Sorry, Governor. Honorable.
Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.